What's up, guys? Week number six is past us as we look on to week seven. We cover the good and bad performances from last week, get you caught up with some injury news. The Eagles losing Miles Sanders and Zach Ertz in the same week. They're going to be out for quite a while as we get set for this Sunday's week of football. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Teddy Talk and give us that five-star review on Apple Podcasts. Let's roll.
This is Darren Waller, and you're listening to the Teddy Talk Podcast.
Streaming from beautiful Portland, Oregon, for all things fantasy football. This is the Tutty Talk Podcast.
Barkley with a burst. Barkley down the sideline. Saquon Barkley.
Jackson takes it himself. Look at him turn back and forth. Oh, he broke his ankles.
He did what? It's a C-Mac attack.
I'm really not into dreams anymore. Okay, I'm in the nightmare.
A lot of people ain't gonna be able to take that over and 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 over again.
You like that? You like that?
Here are your hosts, Bryce Wells.
I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna put you on blast.
Kevin Nelson.
It's a damn shame because Pete Carroll is wasting Russell Wilson, and there's nothing we can do about it.
And Chase Daskalos.
No. Lamar Jackson is going to be a top five quarterback.
We're almost halfway through the NFL season already. Insane. It's October 21st. Kevin, Bryce, and Chase. Teddy Talk, episode 32. It's kind of a cool number of an episode. 32 teams in the NFL. And a special episode for each and every one of them. Bryce, as always, we start with you in the studio in Portland, Oregon. What's up, dude?
Oh, we've had a busy couple weeks, that's for sure. You know, it's been interesting. This last week was kind of a weird week when looking at all of our fantasy teams in our leagues. It just didn't seem like a lot of points were getting scored by guys on our teams. So that's like 2 weeks in a row now, and it's going to be interesting this next week. Kind of excited. Kind of a week to build a little bit more momentum, get a couple games ahead of your league mates, and ready to dive into it.
Chase, what's popping?
Yeah, I'm excited for this week because I can't believe I'm saying this because I love NFL and football so much, but what a boring week last week. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the low scores, like, I mean, there's so many teams in our league scoring under 100 points, 115 points. You're winning matchups with 120 points. Kevin, you joked that Sunday was a perfect time to get outside. And if there's any day to miss football, go to the pumpkin patch. Take the girl out, take the wife out, do anything like that. You didn't miss anything, really.
I was right.
Other than Derrick Henry going nuclear,
yeah,
you didn't miss anything. So I'm excited for this next week. Hopefully it picks up a little bit and there's some better games on the slate for week seven.
All the good offenses are back this week. Saints, they, you know, showed kind of Seattle's number one rated DVOA offense this season. The Raiders are back this week. So all of those teams that were on bye, they're back. For week seven, I'm doing good. I'm doing well. The Seattle Seahawks are going to sign Antonio Brown in a couple of weeks. Well, it's all subjective right now. And everybody's like, why would you do that? Why would you bring a guy like that in your locker room? Your offense is on. Shut up. Shut up. He's going to be wide receiver three. I get it.
Oh,
he's a
God.
Head case. He's a lunatic. He's going to be behind DK and Lockett. They're going to work him in. He's 32 years old, for God's sake. Chase, what do you got?
So the report said other teams, it's interesting because the only team that was named was Seattle.
Right.
Where I think he's going, and we've talked about it before, he's going to Baltimore. That's my take. They clearly, we have talked about this, they clearly mm-hmm. need another weapon. Their offense has not been what it was last year. They need another guy beside Hollywood. Miles Boykin looks terrible. You still got Willie Snead running around. Like, he's got the connection with, he's Hollywood Brown's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to Baltimore.
So he and Russ work out quite a bit and have been these past few off seasons. Now Russell's worked out with Odell Beckham Jr. and other guys too. I think all these receivers and good quarterbacks all kind of get together at some point, if it's on video and hits Instagram or not at some point. But yeah, Baltimore, much more opportunity than in Seattle. Seattle's going to get Josh Gordon back at some point. Philip Dorsett is on this roster. You know, what the hell? Where's Antonio Brown fit into that? I don't really see it, but exciting nonetheless. And it wouldn't be a season without a Seattle mega trade. It feels like we're kind of rolling into that. So let's get into the good and bad from last week, starting with the good. You got a good week from Deshaun Watson, 28 for 37, 335 yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 carries, and 26 yards in the overtime loss to the Titans. Who is our other quarterback? Ryan Tannehill, 30 for 41, 364 passing yards, 4 touchdowns and a pick. Tannehill is making a case for MVP this season. I know he's a dark horse and maybe third, fourth, or fifth on the list, but going into this season, I think you would have Watson in that discussion and not Tannehill, and yet here we are, week 7.
It was good to see Watson kind of ball out. He's had a tough go at it, and even then, he hasn't really been bad. You know, he played KC, Baltimore, Pittsburgh hit the first 3 weeks, and now his schedule's kind of lightened up. It's a little more pass-friendly, and we're starting to see it. And guys like Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller are seeing a little more consistency at least the last couple weeks, which is great for fantasy. I know Brandon Cooks ended up being kind of a late roundish pickup for a lot of gamers out there who decided to draft him. And that's starting to pay off. And it's good to see. I know we're big Brandon Cooks fans and we're believers in Deshaun Watson. So it's nice to see the offense kind of firing on all cylinders at this point. And I don't think Deshaun Watson, you know, can make a case for MVP at the moment. I think Russ has now got a solid lead on that, and guys like Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers have kind of poo-pooed the last week or two. So, you know, I think Russ has got a nice little lead, but it's good to see Deshaun Watson back. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks in the league, and good to see him doing well with Bill O'Brien out of the picture now.
Well, and Houston's 1-5 too, and we know that. Kind of unfortunately, although it's just kind of how it is, that team record and team success plays into MVP. So, in my opinion, unless they have some heroic comeback postseason, there's no shot at Deshaun winning MVP. The guy I want to talk about was Will Fuller. I might be a little biased because I have a lot of him, but he's done a phenomenal job, in my opinion, as being that team's wide receiver one. We know he doesn't necessarily fit the body type. He's like a 6'1", 195. 4-3 guy who kind of fits the mold as that field stretcher burner. But so far, he's number 16 in receptions, number 12 in yards, number 7 in touchdowns. And for fantasy, wide receiver 9 on the year. And we highlighted Brandon Cooks too. He's starting to click with Bill O'Brien gone. His last two games, Brandon Cooks has gone 8 for 161 and a touchdown, 30.1 PPR fantasy points. And then last week, 9 for 68 and 1 for 21.8. fantasy points per game. Those two are getting the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll flip it to the other team, and AJ Brown for the Titans has been really good when he's been on the field. Missed weeks 2 and 3 with the knee injury, rolled right into the weird COVID bye in week 4. But since then, 17.7 and 20.3 points for him. Getting a lot of targets, of course, the touchdowns, 3 total in those two games, and none bigger than the one at the end of the game to send it to overtime. And the faith and confidence that Tannehill has in him, and a second-year guy already. Very similar. I mean, obviously, you can make the comparison to DK, same school, all the relationship that they have. But it's kind of that same connection that we're seeing from Ryan Tannehill to A.J. Brown and Russ to DK. So you love to see that if you're an A.J. Brown owner, because you're like, where the hell is my wide receiver one or my wide receiver two for the first quarter of the season? Well, here he is, and I think he's here to stay. Even with the matchup against Pittsburgh this week, I think Tannehill – I'll bounce out of you guys. Tannehill's kind of a must start at this point. Rushing upside, team's really good on the ground, manages it well, but he scores tons of touchdowns. Another 4 touchdown game for Tannehill. It's becoming casual for him at this point.
And would you have guessed him to be QB10 through the first 6 weeks? I wouldn't have guessed that. And I think what's really cool about this team is that they did slide under the radar a little bit this year. We saw the push last year into the playoffs. And I think we needed to see a little bit more, and we are seeing it. And I think we do have to give a lot of credit to Mike Vrabel. And I saw something really cool on Twitter that there's a theory that actually kind of came into fruition where it was a 2nd-and-1 play. They were on defense against Houston, and basically they put 12 men onto the field to they were stopping the clock to get an extra, I think it was 40 seconds, which ended up helping leading them to a game-winning drive, and it was really cool. And so seeing Tannehill do this every week, it's pretty damn impressive. I guess I'm a little worried going into this next week because they're playing Pittsburgh, but I don't think I can casually tell people to not play Ryan Tannehill because, I mean, why not? You know, I think that every week he has the rushing touchdown upside, and he's been fairly clean with the ball. He isn't turning the ball over that much. Derrick Henry makes it a lot easier for him to throw with all the attention being there. And A.J. Brown is a force in the league. He's going to be a top receiver in the league, if not kind of creeping into that discussion already. And it was just so funny how the first couple weeks, oh, Corey Davis, new wide receiver one. He never was. Never, ever, ever was. A.J. Brown's the guy there. You're really excited if you have any piece in this offense, including guys like Jonnu Smith as well. So can't wait to see what he does against a really good defense in Pittsburgh, who lost one of their best players this week. So should be interesting to see what he does. And it will put Tennessee into the conversation of where their trajectory is going in the playoffs and going forward.
To me, Tannehill's been a pleasant surprise as well. We know Tennessee wants to run the ball. They're number two in run plays per game, yet he's still getting it done fantasy-wise. He's almost top 10 in every single efficiency metric there is. And honestly, it makes me want to buy low on Sam Darnold as another hopeful Adam Gase escape success story.
Yeah.
And you're talking about in Dynasty?
In Dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah.
13 touchdowns is two picks for Tannehill and 14 if you had the rushing one he had against Buffalo too. So awesome start to the season for him and for the Titans. Still undefeated. The bad flip side to all this. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Same game. They played against each other. Rodgers, 16 for 35, 160 yards, two INTs, a couple of carries for 14 yards, and then Brady, 17 for 27, 166 and two touchdowns. Everybody going into this game was like, shootout. Rodgers looked confused. He was blitzed early and often. He was getting into it with Ndamukong Suh. It's a shitty day for the Packers offense that has been a well-oiled machine up until this point in the season. And really, I think that the story out of this was Tampa Bay is very much for real and can win the ball without Brady having to be, you know, Brady of old, or Brady of young, I should say. And he can be Brady of old and just hand the ball off to Ronald Jones, who had a pretty solid day on the ground. But that defense for Tampa Bay is a tough one. And a pass-happy division, I think that they're going to start to click and make things difficult for a lot of these really high-octane offenses that we see in that division.
Kevin, I think you nailed that too, because the Buccaneers are 4-2. They had somewhat of a slow start, and now things are starting to click. They've got Godwin back. Ronald Jones has been great the last 3 weeks. He's rushed over 100 yards in every one of those games. So, and in addition, the defense is so much better than I expected, to be honest. I wasn't really projecting them to be a top defense in the league, and it's starting to look like that. This is going to be the worst week you see from Aaron Rodgers this season, in my opinion. So don't freak out. I mean, you look at his first four games, 30.76, 18.7, 24.52, 29.58, all really, really good weeks in fantasy. This is just one of those down weeks that no one was expecting because we were all hoping for a shootout between two older quarterbacks, and it didn't quite happen. The next stretch of games for Rodgers is kind of unfair, too. You look at it, at Houston, then Minnesota, at San Francisco, then Jacksonville. He is going to eat over the next 4 weeks and might be one of the easiest schedules going forward. So if there's any possibility that an owner of Aaron Rodgers is slightly concerned with the last week of production and is overreacting, you know, go out and get Aaron Rodgers because you might just win your league doing that. I don't know how you're going to be able to do that because I don't think many people are going to overreact to this last week against Tampa Bay. But even if there is some small shred of doubt in that owner, take advantage of it. Go see if you can get them right now.
I was disappointed in this game. I had an incredible morning of DraftKings for this lineup where I had played Trey Burton at tight end, who scored two touchdowns, 20-something points. Justin Jefferson, who we saw absolutely pop off. Kind of played contrarian and went with Julio Jones at wide receiver. and I played the Miami defense, who pitched the shutout to the Jets and turned over Joe Flacco, got pressure on Joe Flacco. And then I stacked Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, and Chris Godwin, hoping that that game would pop off. And obviously it did not. It killed me. But Tampa's defense really is that good. The pressure that they generate is insane. Their run defense is incredible. They're sort of a pass funnel, but their secondary has been kind of tidied up a little bit. So I guess, yeah, going forward, I'm not worried about Rodgers. This was just one of those weeks, kind of a shitty matchup, and they couldn't do anything right.
We flip to running backs, Derrick Henry and DeAndre Swift. So Derrick Henry, you're getting kind of used to this. Maybe not this sort of a line where he scores over 40 points and was our fantasy player of the week, but 22 carries, 212 yards, 2 touchdowns. He also had 2 catches for, I think, 59 yards through the air. That big one in overtime that set him up with the game-winning drive there where he punched it in from the Wildcat. He's unstoppable, absolutely unstoppable. The other guy, DeAndre Swift, 14 carries, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 catches for 7. And we kind of feel like this is the changing of the guard in Detroit, where Swift can finally get the chance to maybe take over. I know they've got Kerryon Johnson. I know that they've got AP, but it just felt like in this game, with him being so explosive on, I think, a few more carries, not many, than Adrian Peterson. Don't have it written down in front of me, but we all know that DeAndre Swift is fit for this type of this line and this output in this offense. And AP got it started, kind of paved the path for him. It's time to pass the torch over to Swift.
Yeah, God, I want to talk about both these guys real quick, so I'll do that. But Derrick Henry has a really good shot at finishing as RB1 this year. He hasn't been stopped once, and it's easy to watch that on the field whenever he handles the ball. And I think he is going to end up going down as a generational back in talent. There's not very many 6'4" running backs in NFL history that have been as dominant as he has, and to have the durability to go along with it is just so valuable in fantasy football, especially in dynasty, that why would you try to give him up or trade him to rebuild a team? There's just no point. As for DeAndre Swift, this is a guy that's being talked about all over the internet after this last performance. And you're just hoping that Matt Patricia and that team decide to give the ball to the best player in that backfield, and that is DeAndre Swift. And we've been saying this for a long time. You had to be patient with DeAndre Swift, other guys like J.K. Dobbins, some of the other rookie running backs. And Swift is kind of been, outside of Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, he's the one that I think some people thought was the best back in this draft, and we finally got a little taste of it. We got a little bit. Do we expect to see more touches going forward? I would hope so, right? I mean, there's a couple games that they were in, and there was that drop in the end zone that he had that could have won them the game. So the record is better than it looks at the moment, but God damn, if you were stashing DeAndre Swift, you're licking your chops right now, because you're looking to play him at flex every week going forward, as long as he's getting the touches. So this next week will be very telling about how they use DeAndre Swift in the upcoming weeks. And if it's any sort of if his situation is similar to what it was before this last week, then I think it's going to be tough wanting to play him or trying to figure out when to play him. And I had a gut feeling that he was going to do well this week, and I got lucky and decided to play him, and it paid off, kind of. So just be patient. You got to watch this next week and really kind of take in everything that you see and how this team uses him, because I think it might still be difficult to decide when to play him. But I know we all want to see him play and touch the ball more, so hopefully he does.
So I'm optimistic going forward with Swift, but I'm not all in on Detroit, as this was actually Swift's second lowest snap share of the year, second lowest routes run, but he got the 14 carries, so he's going to demand more volume. But for Derrick Henry, he's always going to be held back and knocked because of his passing game involvement, or I guess a better way to phrase that is his lack of passing game involvement. He got 8 receptions on the year, but he is one of the greatest size, speed specimens of all time. Yearly, we see it every single year. He rips off these 90-yard touchdown runs at 6'3", 250. He leads the league in attempts. He leads the league in yards. And he needs the touchdowns, though, because in PPR league, 6 Kamara receptions is equal to 1 Derrick Henry touchdown. So for him to be RB1, he's got to keep up the touchdowns. Good news is, so far, he's number 1 in the league in red zone touches. He essentially has nobody behind him. They're going to give the ball to Derrick Henry in the red zone. What's the rookie's name? Darrington Evans is on IR now. Jeremy McNichols is a satellite back who plays mine. Nobody's stealing touches from Derrick Henry. He's number 1 in red zone touches and number 4 in total TDs with 6. So he's got to keep the touchdowns up, in my opinion, for him to be that RB1 because of the lack of receiving game. But if there's any back in the NFL that's going to lead the league in touchdowns, it's going to be Derrick Henry.
Right. His one bad week this season, 8.4 points against Jacksonville in week 2, he had 25 carries. So that's just, he's going to get that volume every week. And what more do you want than volume in a guy that has potential to do what he does and make it look so good? So, yeah, good luck buying Derrick Henry now after that week. The bad, oh boy, these were, well, I guess one's a really big dud. The other's is kind of a, meh. But Alexander Mattison, 10 carries, 26 yards, 1 reception for 4 yards. And the other is Devin Singletary, 10 carries for 32 yards and 1 catch for 13. The story here is Mattison, because I think Matthew Berry and every fantasy football head ever was saying, Alexander Mattison, Alexander Mattison, Alexander Mattison, he's going to score 20 points. He's going to be, they're playing Atlanta. They're going to just have, then it didn't happen. Blame it on Kirk Cousins, blame it on the Vikings defense, blame it on whatever. But Alexander Mattison was an absolute dud and the waiver wire pickup of the year for a lot of people, and we're freaking out. We saw it at the end of last season too. He just flopped. It's just absolute bad game from Alexander Mattison. Guys, what do you think?
It's so funny this year. It feels like whenever a backup running back gets the job, they underperform that very next week, except for guys like Kareem Hunt, who's, you know, kind of always just been relevant, even with Chubb in the backfield. But, you know, I want to kind of focus on this situation, because if we're buying into all these backups that are taking the starting roles, we're just assuming they're getting all this volume that the starting running back got. And for Madison's sake, I mean, realistically, it wasn't that bad for him. You know, he only touched the ball 11 times. So, like, I guess it was pretty bad. But this week, it's similar to, like, Boston Scott. Boston Scott's supposed to come in and take the Miles Sanders role. And I just don't think that's a great play. I don't want to play backup running backs when they're clearly a backup for a reason. And, you know, how many times are we going to buy into the backup running back coming in and just having a 10-plus point performance in fantasy? It's just, I feel like the odds just haven't worked out in favor of the backups. So I'm kind of avoiding playing those types of guys until they can prove to me that they are able to put up points. Like Joshua Kelly's another guy that has been underperforming the last 3 weeks as the primary back, and Justin Jackson's gotten involved and stuff. So I agree with you guys. I'm kind of just avoiding Madison. He might be the most overrated backup in the league. He might not be. I know everybody loves him in Dynasty in case Dalvin gets hurt again, which he usually does, but It's just too risky for me. As for Devin Singletary, I think it's actually easier to decide when to play him. You know, when Zach Moss is on the field, Devin Singletary doesn't do a whole lot. But when Zach Moss isn't playing, Devin Singletary is worthy, a flex-worthy play. So I'm just not in on either one of these running backs at all. I'm just kind of avoiding them altogether. I'm not going out to buy them. I guess if they're on your waiver wire, go ahead and pick them up, but neither one of these guys are going to be there. So don't even worry about it. Don't put your focus into trying to get these guys. I know the running back market is thin right now with all the injuries, but it's just go play a wide receiver instead. It's just easier to do that.
I have Dalvin Cook on my dynasty team. I was able to acquire Alexander Mattison from Kevin for a reasonable deal, thank God, because it took way too long for me to get freaking Alexander Mattison on my damn team because everyone wanted the fucking world for him when you just know he's a backup for a reason. Dalvin Cook was signed to a 5-year contract. Alexander Mattison was the third round, the 38th pick in the third round. He's essentially a fourth round pick. He's a third round compensatory pick for a reason. Bryce, you said it. These guys are backups for a reason. What was ridiculous was on DraftKings, Derrick Henry was priced at 7,300 and Alexander Mattison was 7,200. You compare those two games between the two. I think Derrick Henry put up 40 something DK points and Alexander Mattison put up 3. And the issue was he got taken out of the game. With Dalvin out, we expected Mattison to see probably about 25 touches and to play like 75 to 80% of the snaps. Well, when you fall behind 20-0 and then 30-7, that is what happens when you're not a good pass catcher. You get taken out. You get 10 carries, one reception. I think he played about 50% of snaps, and we saw snaps from Amir Abdullah and Mike Boone. So, again, dude, I'm so happy that Kevin was able to trade me Alexander Mattison for something that I thought was reasonable because I could not get Alexander Mattison for the life of me, knowing that my people, everyone wanted a second round pick for him. It's like, I'm not trading. I'm not doing that. Finally, I was able to give up Gabriel Davis, who I really like. Kevin really likes, looks really good so far for Alexander Mattison. I like that deal. Alexander Mattison is a backup. He is Dalvin Cook's handcuff. And I'm going to be done ranting now, but thank you, Kevin, because this is exactly why I didn't want to pay the world for a backup running back. They're backups for a reason. The dude was a fourth round pick.
I wish everybody could get deals done like we do. We've been wheeling and dealing lately, buddy. We got a deal done today too. But first, we got to get through these good and bads. We got receivers and tight ends. The wide receivers, it's a chase guy. Christian Kirk had 2 catches. Oh, what? How's he on the 2 touchdowns? And 86 yards. Big game for him on Monday night against the Dallas Cowboys, who one was on one of those little end-around flips forward, so call it a rush, call it a catch, whatever you want. Kyler gets credit for it, too. And the other was a bomb, and Kyler threw it on the button. He had missed Andy Isabella a couple times earlier in the game, missed Kirk earlier in the game. Finally, they connect. It feels like it's been so long since we've seen that from Christian Kirk, a huge splash play like that, and the bulk of his yards. I think it was close to 75 yards on that play. So big week for Christian Kirk on just 2 catches. The other was AJ Brown. Talked about him earlier. 5 for 56 and 2 touchdowns. And Bryce, you mentioned it earlier. Corey Davis, who? This is AJ Brown's number one spot on this team. And there's nobody in the same universe as him when it comes to that. So a fun waiver wire pickup at the beginning in Corey Davis. But AJ Brown, the second or third round pick that you had him as in your drafts this season, is definitely probably a lock to finish around the top 15, I would say, at this point with the rate he's at.
So while Christian Kirk is one of our good receivers of the week, I don't necessarily think that his stat line is all that impressive. I mean, two catches for 86 yards and 2 touchdowns is great. I'm not shitting on that by any means, but he's just not getting the volume. And I like Christian Kirk. I really do. But if we're talking in Dynasty, I feel like, do I want a piece of this offense with Kyler Murray? The answer is yes. Yes, I do. But as long as Hopkins is there, you have Kirk at this, number two role. Maybe Kyler needs to improve, which he will. Maybe there's something missing with Kirk. I'm still trying to figure out what that is, and we're all hoping for his breakout. I really want to see it, but I'm not sure if he's going to actually break out this year. Maybe it happens in the second half of the season. We're hoping for that. We're kind of banking on that, but I'm not trying to go grab him on waivers and seasonal leagues. It's just not enough. You know, I just need to see more consistency. I need to see more volume before he even pops into my head as a guy that I think is a playable player on your starting roster every week.
Real quick, Chase, before you go, I think the breakout has happened. I think that It happened last week, and it's here to stay for the next month. Want to know why? Schedule. Seattle by Miami, Buffalo, Seattle. Ding dong. If you're not buying Christian Kirk after that, and you can say that I get it. He hasn't been targeted as much. He hasn't seen the volume as much. It's just two touchdowns on two catches. But Kyler completed 9 passes, I think, in the game. So if he's hitting on two of those a week, sign me up. Christian Kirk in seasonal leagues, if he's on waivers, and I saw it in one of my leagues, he got dropped after that week. How do you drop him after that? I get it after 0. I get it after 9, 10. Anyway, Chase, you fire away. The Christian Kirk breakout, I think, is finally here.
Yeah, well, you sort of stole a lot of what I was going to say.
Oh, damn it, I'm sorry.
No, it's kind of my guy. But I agree with Brett. The performance looked good, but we're fooling ourselves, in my opinion, if we think that 2 receptions counts as a full breakout. Mm-hmm. I think this is a really good sign. But my God, yeah. Kyler Murray completed 9 passes.
Yeah.
The issue, in my opinion, is that this Arizona team is not anything like what we expected. They are number 7 in run plays per game. I projected or sort of thought that Kyler Murray could trend towards 600 pass attempts this year in an air raid offense with a shitty defense playing in shootouts all game. So they're running that's the offense is not what we thought it would be. Like, again, they're number 7 in run plays per game. They have the 2nd best defense in the league, Arizona. They're giving up 18.7 points per game, which is wedged in between Baltimore at number 1 and Pittsburgh at number 3. 1 Baltimore, 2 Arizona. Arizona. Yeah. And their first round pick, Isaiah Simmons, hasn't done shit. He's playing like 30% of the snaps. You tell me that at the beginning of the year that so far through 6 weeks that in points per game, Arizona was going to be number 2. I would be like, oh my God, how good is Isaiah Simmons? This dude is a freak. He changed their entire defense. He's done nothing.
Buda Baker is really good.
Buda Baker
good.
Is, yes. Okay. Buda Baker is balling.
While I think it is impressive, I do look at the teams that they have played. San Francisco, Washington, Detroit, Carolina, Jets, Dallas without Dak Prescott. So they're doing their job. I'm not shitting on the defense. They're doing their job. But let's see what it can do against Seattle this next week before I buy into it.
That's the point, though. That's the point as to why Christian Kirk, because I agree. They're not going to be able to stop Seattle. Nobody can. That game is going to be a shootout. And then you get Miami, and then you get Buffalo, and then you get Seattle. So one of my bullet points was going to be good news is look at what he hasn't fully broken out yet, but we get 4 weeks here of games that I would probably project to be a little bit more of a shootout than what we've seen. And my emphasis is going to be, especially in Dynasty, Kevin and I were working on a deal that involved Christian Kirk, and I was frustrated with Christian Kirk, not really ready to move on, but Kevin and I had a good deal going. And then I had looked, and this was on Monday when we were talking, and I'm like, okay, hold on. He's playing Dallas tonight, which is probably about as juicy as it can get. And looking at the schedule forward, he's got Seattle, Miami, Buffalo, Seattle. Is this the right time to trade Christian Kirk? Kind of off. Like, fuck no. Hell no. And then he did what he did. So I'm sorry, Kevin. I feel good that I hung on to Kirk, and I'm excited for these next 4 games. If it's nothing special, these next 4 games, I think absolutely we're worried that really the number 1 DeAndre Hopkins, who leads the league in receiving yards, he's kind of the only guy that matters on an offense that is going to be number 7 in run plays per game. And have, although schedule has played into it, I still think Arizona has a really underrated and really good defense.
Kirk catches the bomb and Chase whips around really quick and points at me and goes, no deal. So there it went, just like that. It was a cakey one too. All right, the bad. Here's a guy that I traded for, and I think he's going to be on the move in a ton of dynasty leagues, a ton of seasonal leagues. A lot of guys that are chasing, hopefully for him to turn it around at some point. We saw him pop in week 1. It's Juju Smith-Schuster, 2 receptions for 6 yards, just flop. The other was Cooper Kupp, 3 catches for 11 yards versus the Niners on, I think, 8 or 9 targets. Why do I know that? It's not sitting in front of me. Because he scarred me. We took him on a bet. at 5.5 receptions. We took the over. He was just blistered with targets, and he dropped a touchdown, and he dropped this, and he dropped that, and Goff missed this and that, and it just sucked. Worst game of his career. One of my buddies back home, he's a huge Rams fan, and he said the same thing. It was the worst Cooper Kupp performance he's ever seen. So go figure, right? When the boys throw some dough on it, Cooper shits the bed. But back to Juju. I think he's more of the story here. Cooper Kupp could be fine. Juju is not only maybe not the wide receiver one on this team anymore. Deontay Johnson comes back. I'm not saying James Washington's ahead of him on the depth chart, but he's just not getting the ball. And they're using other guys in this weird, tons of jet sweep, handing it off to Claypool, flippy dippy, flea flicker shit all over the. That's not Juju. And he's not involved in any of that. So what do you guys think? Juju, one, rest of season, and two, Juju not in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think the consensus around the fantasy community is that Juju is not going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler for much longer. And good, because let's see a team use him the way he should be used. And I would love to see him go to a team like Houston. I could see him going to a team like Miami. It'd be interesting to see where he goes, because I think no matter where he goes, he's going to succeed. It kind of feels like Amari Cooper pre-Cowboys trade. You know, he had this great, great first season, and things just kind of didn't work out for him that much afterwards. And then he finds a new team and dominates. And I think that's what's going to happen with Juju Smith-Schuster. So in dynasty formats, an easy buy low candidate, and I think you can get him. Like I really don't think it's that hard to get a deal done for Juju Smith-Schuster. If you're a rebuild team, I think that is the target at wide receiver you have to go after. That's a must grab. As for Cooper Kupp, you know, I don't think we're going to see a lot more weeks like this from him. There were just so many passes that he could have caught, or passes that weren't actually catchable. I'm looking on his profile right now. His catchable target rate is 82.2%. That's 36th in the league. Not great. Not great, Jared Goff. I think that you're a little bit more to blame here than Cooper Kupp is. So I think that it comes down to a quality of targets issue for Cooper Kupp, but it could have just been it could have been all around a bad week for him. I think we're going to see a bounce back. I'm not worried about Cooper Kupp. He's always the primary target for Jared Goff, and Robert Woods being in the mix too isn't bad for Cooper Kupp either. So the problem that might arise is that this team does like to run the ball a fuck ton, and I think we're going to see that a lot more, and I think they're going to go to Daryl Henderson quite a bit in the next few weeks. So just keep that in mind. Don't freak out about Cooper Kupp. It's going to be all right. He's going to be fine. He's a good receiver in the league. There's literally no concern for him there. But and seasonal for Juju, it's scary. You know, it's not great, and I think you could move on from him and try to see if you can get a trade where it involves you moving Juju to a different team and getting something back in return. I think there are still some people out there that are believers that Juju will pop again, but right now, just watching Pittsburgh play, it just doesn't feel like that he is a focal point in that offense.
I group Cooper Kupp and Juju like very similarly, and in the same tier of it's the environment that scares me, the team environment, the fantasy environment that they have. The Rams are number 29 in pass plays per game, and the Steelers are number 26. So really that passing game volume isn't there. Both teams want to run the ball. And then on the other side of the ball on their team, the Rams have a dominant defense, looks really good with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. And the Steelers also, we clearly have seen, they have the best defensive line in the league. So none of their games are really getting out of hand and turning into these shootouts, and both teams want to run the ball. I like Cooper Kupp rest of season and seasonal. He had 10 targets last week. The target quality isn't there like you mentioned, but I don't think Juju's even sniffed a 10 target game so far this year. So I like Kupp rest of season. I like Juju better in dynasty because of what we think. He's going to move.
He's so young still.
Yeah, he's 23. if you're him, like you, we know he's a great guy. Like he's dancing on TikTok and doing this and doing that. And regardless of if he's going 2 catches for 8 yards, he's out at midfield after the game dancing and doing this. He's got a great attitude, but he's not going to be in Pittsburgh next year. And yes, the number one destination should probably be
Houston.
Yeah.
Houston, Baltimore. You mentioned that earlier. Oh my God. For Antonio Brown. That would be good. I like Miami too. You just hope he doesn't go to a team like the Jets or the Giants to chase that New York clout.
Baltimore anyway. Would be sick. Baltimore would be awesome. I think that complements Hollywood really well.
No. That's bad. Baltimore's bad like to that? Me. You're in the same situation with what I just talked about.
Just
with
volume.
Team wanting to run the ball and dominant defense. Sure. Look at Hollywood.
Yeah.
We project the world for Hollywood. He's wide receiver 30-something this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And he's more of a field stretcher kind of guy. He's not the alpha like we talked about. But I would not want Juju to go to Baltimore for fantasy purposes.
That's fair.
Juju to Las Vegas. How about that, Chase? I'd like that.
You're just tickling his balls on that.
He's
right
all
there.
In on Brian Edwards now, who we also got in that trade. All right, the good tight end was Darren Fells. Not much to say here. 6 catches for 85 yards and a touchdown. Chase, I want to immediately flip this to you because you clamor every week and go, if Houston had a fucking tight end, if they had one good one, my God, because Watson is consistently throwing to these tight ends, it seems like every week. You just don't know who the fuck it's going to be. This week, it was Darren Fells.
Yeah, no, it's every single time a Houston tight end makes a play. I looked at you guys and be like, just imagine if they had a guy. If we've talked about David Njoku. That's not happening.
What about Zach Ertz when the Philadelphia Eagles move on from him?
Well, how old is he going to be? 80?
I know, but it just doesn't seem like they desire to have a top tight end, you know? It doesn't feel like that's their primary objective. They just need a veteran to come in that is more athletic than Darren Fells, who it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch this guy do well, and I'm glad he's doing well for football's sake, but God damn it. You've been preaching every week. We need a tight end there. And I think, Zach Ertz slides into the Houston Texans DMs and gets involved.
Yeah, but whose regime has not made tight end a priority there? 34-year-old Darren Fells, Jordan Akins. Bill O'Brien's gone. You bring in a new guy. You got Deshaun Watson. I'm not going to say he's frustrated, but he's talent-wise one of the top 5 quarterbacks in the league. They kind of look at that roster and be like, all right, let's get Deshaun like a reliable weapon, tight end. I don't know if they're going to draft a guy.
Jason Witten.
Kyle Pitts from Florida looks incredible. He would fit in right there. That would be awesome. Him, Fuller.
But is Houston really going to are they going to use a first round pick? Oh, they can't. They don't have any. Yeah.
You're right.
Miami so they won't even get Pitts. So.
Yeah, that was a Larry Metunzel deal, right? So, again, crazy. Whoever takes over there is that kind of sucks because you had DeAndre Hopkins and now you have David Johnson, like Brandon Cooks, but you now have David Johnson, Brandon Cooks, and no picks. So,
the bad was Jonnu Smith. We had him slated for a big, big week against the Texans and goes 1 for 13, suffered the minor injury, ankle injury.
Yes.
So no big week for Jonnu. It was Firkskur's week. A week too late for Chase, who played him in DFS the week before and he didn't do anything. So I don't think you have anything to worry about here with Jonnu. Just kind of keep an eye on his injury report status as things move forward with the Titans. But we still love Jonnu inside the top 10, at least this season. We've seen what he can do. He's a big wide receiver playing tight end.
Mm-hmm. Love me some Jonnu Smith. Yeah, it's interesting to watch Firkser dominate in the shoes of Jonnu Smith. It's a minor injury, sounds like. So I know his status is questionable this week, but like you said, don't be worried about Jonnu.
This plays into the narrative too that we talked about with Alexander Mattison. This Firkser guy is a backup. He's a backup for a reason. Yeah. Like, remember Ryan Griffin last year for the Jets?
Yeah.
Last year, week 8 with Chris Herndon out, dude puts up 22.6 PPR points, tight end two for the week. And then 3 weeks later, he does it again, puts up 21.9, another tight end number two for the week. This year, 32% snap share, 5 receptions. And I know that the environment isn't there. Chris Herndon really hasn't done anything other than that. But like we talked about with Madison and now here, these dudes are backups for a reason. They can spot start and have good games. But Johnny's the guy, clearly, and we're not worried about Anthony Firkser.
All right. That's the good and the bad. Other notables were Julio Jones, 8 for 137, 2 touchdowns. Big week for a pick that probably was in the first round, early second. So finally, you see Julio has been battling injury all year. Might get traded here soon. Who knows? Things are weird in Atlanta. Ronald Jones is the other one. We mentioned him earlier in the podcast. 23 carries for 113 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 catches for 8 yards. And a game where Tampa Bay got up early and just pound, 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 pound. The injuries.
Were you really sick this week? What was the problem?
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that? You
my
broke
back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or well, what portion?
Spinal.
Ravens head coach John Harbaugh with them on bye. He says Mark Ingram has a chance to play next week against Steelers. We'll see. Keep an eye on that. And honestly, keep an eye on that whole backfield. Jesus kind of needs an injury to somebody to really level out the carries because all three of those guys are taking over. Chris Mortensen reports that Zach Ertz is going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks with an ankle injury. We talked about that. And then the other big one was Miles Sanders. He's not expected to play this week against the Giants with a knee injury, out at least a couple of weeks is what we're hearing there. So pray for Carson Wentz and company. It's going to be bad in Philly. Fuck Boston Scott. You don't need Boston Scott. Let's get into it. Rapid fire week number 7.
The New York Giants are at Philadelphia. Carson Wentz and the second string practice squad hope to get a win against the G-men to keep themselves relevant in the NFC East conversation. Not that hard to do right now. Travis Fulgham and Boston Scott are really the only plays here, but I'd look elsewhere if possible. For the Giants, Slayton remains as the only somewhat reliable producer on this team, but even he could disappoint you at any moment. To simply put it, I'm avoiding this game altogether.
The Steelers travel to COVIDville to try to slow down the big dog Derrick Henry, while Juju will hit downtown Nashville to make TikToks. For the Steelers, fire up Big Ben, James Conner, Chase Claypool. I made jokes about Juju, but I'll still play him. And Deontay Johnson should return from his back injury. For the Titans, even against this nasty pit defense, Ryan Tannehill should be a top 15 play. Derrick Henry can run through anything and play A.J. Brown based on talent.
The battle of the NFC East continues with Dallas at Washington. Hard to believe that first place is on the line in D.C. And make it quick, start the boys. Zeke, Amari, CeeDee, and Schultz. No red rifle this week for me. For Washington, I'm starting Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson.
The Buffalo Bills are at the New York Jets. Last week wasn't pretty for the wagon circling Buffalo Bills, but now they get Adam Gase because that's all who's left on the roster. This one's really easy, guys. Like, really easy. Play Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. No need to mess around with Singletary while Zach Moss is back in the lineup. For the Jets, well, I don't even know who's left. Crowder, I guess? Just know if you're still playing Crowder, your team blows.
Teddy Bridgewater, revenge game? Carolina hits the road to New Orleans to take on the Saints. Alvin Kamara will be Week 7's RB1, as Carolina is the league's easiest matchup for opposing running backs. And drama queen Michael Thomas should return to the lineup for the first time since Week 1. I'm out on Drew Brees. For the Panthers, I really like Teddy B versus this pass funnel defense, which will allow targets to my other Panther starts, Mike Davis, Robbie Anderson, and DJ Moore.
This has got to be the shootout week for Green Bay, right? Green Bay at Houston, it should be plenty of offense in this one. You're starting Rodgers, Devontae, Aaron Jones, and Tonyan. On a weird week for tight ends, he'll look to bounce back after a dud in Tampa Bay. For the Texans, start Watson, David Johnson, Will Fuller, and consider Brandon Cooks, as we've talked about him all show long, as a pretty solid option in the flex.
Cleveland at Cincinnati. This should be a layup for Baker, right? Yes and no. Do you really feel confident playing him, even if it's against Cincinnati? I'm not. That being said, Kareem Hunt is lined up to have a huge game. Odell doesn't think he can catch the Rona, but maybe he can catch a TD or two. But he still remains a risky play with Baker at quarterback. For the Bengals, it's time to consistently fire up T. Higgins. Tyler Boyd is good to go as well. And as long as Mixon is healthy, you're playing him.
points, 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 and no defense. Detroit at Atlanta. Week 7's third highest game total offers tons of fantasy value. Matthew Stafford, Kenny Golladay, TJ Hockenson, and Week 6 breakout DeAndre Swift all should smash. And on the other sideline, fire up Matt Ryan, Julio Jones is back, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst, and Todd Gurley.
Seattle at Arizona. Your boy is going to be in the desert for this one. Honestly, like by the time you listen to this on the pod, I will be in Arizona. I will be in Phoenix. Seattle fresh off a bye in Seattle South. It's an easy sweep. Russ, Carson, DK, Lockett, and Olsen is the stream tight end of the week for me. For Arizona, Kyler, Hopkins, Kirk in the flex. I'm worried in a pass-happy shootout if Drake or Edmonds make enough noise for this one.
The Jacksonville Jaguars at the Los Angeles Chargers. This should be fun for everyone but Jaguar players. The Chargers have a really good defense. We know this already, and despite how good they are, you still have to play James Robinson. For the Chargers, continue to roll out Herbert, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Hunter Henry. There's no point in playing Joshua Kelly. He's let us all down 3 weeks in a row.
No points. Week 7's lowest game total set at a snoozing 43.5 points is San Francisco at New England. Cam Newton looks like he's it for New England for me. For the 49ers, George Kittle and Debo Samuel. If you have other better options, I'd look to avoid this slugfest as best as possible, other than the mentioned studs.
Kansas City at Denver. Can the Broncos make it 2 upsets in a row? Probably not. Sorry, Bryce. I like Mahomes, Kelce, CEH, Lev Robinson, Tyreek, Mikal, Anthony Sherman, fuck it, anybody in a KC uni. For the Broncos, like Philip Lindsay in the books.
Tampa Bay at Las Vegas. Can Derek Carr and the Raiders beat another top quarterback in the league? At this point, anything is possible, but the Raiders are kind of hard to project. Play Waller, play Jacobs, even though this matchup isn't favorable for him, and consider Ruggs if you're in need of a boom week. Tampa Bay, on the other hand, is starting to gain some momentum. Speaking of hand, go with the hot hand in Ronald Jones. Play Chris Godwin and don't look back. Be cautious with Mike Evans, and Tom is still a top 15 quarterback, so play him too.
Monday Night Football, and it's bad that the two guys I think of are Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald. Chicago at the Los Angeles Rams. This 45-point game total is unappealing, but with that being said, I'll give David Montgomery and Allen Robinson a start for the Bears, and Cooper Kupp and Bobby Trees the green light for the Rams. But much like San Francisco at New England, there are a lot of better options. Score your fantasy points on Sunday.
Week 7, there we go, baby. I love it. I love the nickname Bobby Trees. Like, it is so good. If you don't know who we're talking about Robert Woods. It's just great. It's just a great nickname. So I like this slate really quick before we wrap up the show. I like this slate better than last week. But God, it is literally either massive boom or massive dud. And I'm sure we'll get a mix of both this week. But in looking at the games, I will definitely fall asleep during the Monday Night Football game. I will definitely fall asleep during the afternoon San Francisco-New England game. I think that's in the afternoon.
What about Thursday night's game, Philly and New York? That one's going to be exciting, huh?
I'm going to have to be very intoxicated in the desert for that one. But like, then there's some really good games, like Pitt and Tennessee. I love that.
Yeah, that one's going to be great.
Buffalo should crush the Jets, but maybe too much. Carolina-New Orleans, that should be good. Green Bay-Houston should be good. Cleveland-Cincy should be good, at least for scoring. Detroit-Atlanta should be a lot of points. Seattle-Arizona, a lot of points. Jacksonville Chargers, maybe. I don't know. We don't really know what could happen there.
But it's just fun to watch Justin Herbert play now. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm starting him in a league. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, at least this week we have tons of points or no points. There's not a lot of wishy-washy. We don't really know, like we had last week, which ended up being just a really bad week for most people. So I think collectively we could see more of in larger leagues, larger rosters, we were seeing 200 points was like amazing. Really, really good.
Is it just me, or does it feel like this year there are a solid amount of good teams and also a solid amount of bad teams? There's no, like, it doesn't feel like there are a ton of high potential middle of the road teams. And maybe that's why the slates are kind of getting nastier as time goes on with all the bye weeks coming up. And I guess we've had a bye week already, but you know, it just kind of seems, it kind of seems gross this year with how the teams across the league are performing.
I think the three best matchups I'm most excited for. You got Steelers Titans, so that's 5-0 versus 5-0, and both have been affected by COVID, which is kind of funny. At least their schedules have. And then in the afternoon, so that's a morning game. You got Seattle and Arizona. That's an afternoon game. Mm. Kevin, I know you're excited for that one. You got 5-0 Seattle versus 4-2 Arizona.
It would literally be there.
Yeah, Kevin will
be there.
Russell Wilson yelling after he
echoing from an empty stadium.
And then I'm excited for Sunday Night Football in Vegas. You got Tom Brady visiting the Raiders.
Oof.
And although I sort of expect that to be maybe low scoring because of how dominant we talked about Tampa's defense is, the Raiders are slowly, with my biases aside, slowly becoming like one of the most fun offenses to watch in the NFL, in my opinion, with the addition of Henry Ruggs and kind of what he's added, whether he's catching the ball or not. I think we all really love watching Josh Jacobs run the ball, what Darren Waller can do. He's a huge wide receiver playing tight end. Blah, 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 blah. I could go on about the Raiders forever, but I'm excited for Sunday Night Football.
What a test they have, too, against that defense that we talked about earlier on the show. How good they looked, how they're clicking. Okay, Raiders get a bye, get plenty of time to prep for this team. And, how different the Raiders look with and without Henry Ruggs is pretty crazy.
I'm going to gush.
Go to 4-2 with that win, too. I mean, and a pretty good resume. You beat Carolina on the road, and you beat the Saints, and you beat the Chiefs. Like, they really haven't had, like, a layup yet, in my opinion. So, go 4-2. You're beating Tampa, who, honestly, I tweeted this out from my Twitter. I was asking, who's the best team in the NFC right now? I really don't know. There's not really a complete team. I think Kevin might lean towards Seattle. But in my opinion,
I know they're flawed.
Their defense is incredibly flawed. So I think, if the Raiders beat the Chiefs, who are, in my opinion, the best team in the AFC, and then they beat the Buccaneers after a bye week, but this week, it's pretty impressive. And then I'm still not saying, the Raiders are the best team in the NFL. They're incredibly flawed.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Your Raiders beating KC gives me the smallest little bit of hope that Denver can keep this momentum going. Now, do I think Denver's going to win? Most likely not.
The bad news that I have for you and kind of my take is you have to score points to beat Kansas City. They can score on anyone. I know Denver's defense is pretty underrated, even with Von Miller out. But the Raiders put up 40 on the road, and that's how you beat the Chiefs. I'm not sure that Drew Lock and the boys are gonna go.
I am ready to be disappointed, but it's not the level of disappointment where I need to jump out a window because my team blew a game. So
Drew Lock may not be able to do it, but Brian McManus sure can.
Oh my God, Brandon McMoneybags, dude. That guy is a high paid athlete, and he wins us games. So watch your mouth.
All right. That's it. That's the show. Should be a really good week in the NFL. Thursday Night Football is back. Monday Night Football is back. We'll see if any of these games get pushed or moved around, but those Tuesday and double Monday games are sure fun too, but kind of getting back to normal. Hopefully all things are back to normal. So stay safe. Go football. No COVID. Let's go. Week 7. We'll talk studies with you next week.